Welcome to the Safety Podcast, where we connect health, safety and environment to keep you learning, evolving and having a positive impact. Thanks for taking the time to join us for this episode. Let's get started. Hi there, thank you for joining us again for the Safety Podcast. It's 2020 and we're back with more educational insights from the world of health, safety, environment and beyond it. Today, our guest on the show is Teresa Swinton, owner and operator of Paradigm Human Performance. I came across Teresa's profile and her work on LinkedIn through an article that she wrote, actually talking about what inspired her into the world of health and safety. And I thought it was a really powerful story, and as a result, reached out to her to hear a bit more about it and see if she'd be interested in coming on to the show to discuss what she does. And as a result of that, thankfully, Teresa agreed to come on and have a chat with me. We had a really interesting conversation where she discussed all the sort of motivations around what got her into what she does currently within the world of human and organizational performance, similar to some of the topics we discussed before. But Teresa has her own spin on what encouraged her and pushed her down this direction, which I'm sure you'll find as interesting as I did. Quite a harrowing personal story that Teresa shares with us that explains why she got into the world of human and organizational performance to try and help business leaders realize just the impact that they have in the work that they do every day. There's lots of areas that we touch on within this, and I'm sure if you are a business leader or, you know, a people manager of any sort and you have influence or you intend to have influence even in the future, this will be an interesting podcast. Teresa joined us all the way from Kansas in America, so the quality of the audio isn't fantastic, but it's real, it's raw, and hopefully it's valuable for you, and I'll catch you on the other side. Teresa Swinton, thank you for coming on to the Safety Podcast. How are you all the way from Kansas? In the old US of A.
Yes, I'm very well, thank you, Richard. Obviously, as you can tell by my accent, not originally from Kansas, but we're out here working for a client. So, yes, spending a bit of time out in the US at the moment, yes.
And you were you in Canada recently as well as part of that trip, or was that a different trip? Or you're doing a lot of traveling these days?
Yeah, that was a bit of a different trip. We were attending and running a workshop at an OPEX conference up there, and so yeah, we're doing a bit of traveling all over the place at the moment. I had another one in Houston last week, and this afternoon I'm flying back into London. I'm chairing a conference on Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday of next week in London. So yeah, we're all over the place at the moment. It's very busy.
Oh wow. What conference is that? Just to
It's the Operational Excellence Conference. It's in central London next week, and if anyone wants to come along, I think you still can join us.
Well, it's probably unlikely we'll get this out in time for that, to be honest. I have to work over the weekend, but I'm sure if anybody is attending that and then listening to this thereafter, they can obviously relate to maybe you're delivering information yourself, are you, as part of that, or just chairing it?
I'm sort of delivering a keynote speech. We've got three panel discussions, fantastic delegates attending and taking part in the panel discussions from some pretty major organizations around the world, and I'm really excited about it, and you know what we're going to talk about today is basically going to also be the subject of my keynote speech on Monday. So yeah,
fantastic. Obviously, Teresa, as we were discussing before coming on air here, I was saying to you about, I mean, initially I started talking to you after an article that you'd posted on LinkedIn that I read and thought was quite powerful, a story and the context around what you're doing today. For those of the audience that aren't familiar with yourself and your organization, could you give us a background as to what you are doing today?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously I'm Teresa Swinton, and I own and run Paradigm Human Performance Limited with my husband, Mick. We're based in Plymouth in the UK, although we also have some operational bases in the US and also Dubai, actually. So we've got a number of consultants around the world working for us different sort of blue chip clients. And basically what we look at is human and organizational performance, but also what we often find that entails is working with leadership teams and executive teams of large organizations to make sure that when we are looking at a, what we would call a HOP program, that we have the right leadership in place who understand what the impact of that program is going to be on their organizations and basically, you know, how to lead. And this is really about, you know, people-centered operational excellence. That's all of this boils down to. That's what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, we had a guest on the show or one or two people talking, you know, around HOP and the principles around it as well. And obviously you have your own context as to what's led you to this. And as we were discussing before, you used to be involved in operational running of businesses. Can you give us more of an overview of, you know, how you've went from that to this and, you know, what has led you to it?
Yeah, so my sort of backstory is that I was an operational manager. I spent the majority of my career in the rail industry, power generation, power distribution, construction, and again in sort of project management, operational management roles. And a number of years ago, I was running a project and had a large number of people working for me, had about 387 guys and girls out working for me on a project which basically ran the length of the UK rail network. We were installing some fibre optic cable, and that was our project. And during that project, we had a road traffic accident in which seven of our guys lost their lives. And at that time, as a project manager, I was very focused on typically what operational people are focused on, making sure my program was running on time and that we were going to, you know, exceed the client expectations in terms of time, making sure that the organization I worked for at the time was going to make some money on the project. And so productivity was a focus, and cost management, if you like, was a focus as well. And when I look back and reflect on the leader that I was in those days, it was a very different person to the one I am today. Although at the time, I was recognized as, you know, one of the high performing leaders in the organization. So, you know, whatever I was doing at the time, I was getting rewarded for suitably. So, on the day of this accident, I got a phone call to say that there'd been a road traffic accident with multiple fatalities. And to cut a long story short, what had happened on that day was eight people had been to a Christmas party the night before and got to the vehicle the following morning and decided that they would decide which of them was the least drunk and that person would drive to work while the others got in the back of the van and slept it off until they got to where they needed to go. And unfortunately, they never got there. As I say, the rest is history. And basically what that did, that it had a massive impact on me personally and professionally. I really didn't want to manage people anymore after that. I worked for an amazing organization, had a fantastic manager at the time who understood the impact that that had on me and basically allowed me to change my career path. And what I thought I wanted to do at the time was look at health and safety and really understand, you know, why these people had done the thing that they'd done. You know, what on earth had made, you know, this group of sensible, competent, you know, clever people decide that, you know, they should get in a van and try to get to work. So I started to try and unpick some of this. And over the years, I've been gone through the sort of my professional, you know, health and safety degree and then looked at the concepts of behaviour-based safety and gone through that sort of evolution, which was important to me at the time, and really drove some massive benefits in the organisations that I've subsequently worked in. And then sort of discovered human performance, thanks to a gentleman that we work very closely now with, and that's somebody called Shane Birch from Bushco HPI in the US. Got introduced to these concepts and really thought, actually, you know, the things that where I'd gone circle with behaviour-based safety and really had found things, you know, I didn't feel that the results that we were driving were sustaining. And I was looking for the next thing, you know, what's next? And so I felt that at that point we'd fixed all of our workers and things were still going wrong. We were still having accidents. We were still having incidents. And so wanted to understand what was next. And then, of course, human and organizational performance, that's a different question. That sort of brings you back to, you know, as a leader and as a leadership team, do we set our people up for success? And that's not just about, you know, how we set the parameters for the job on the day or do a pre-job brief or, you know, make sure there's a risk assessment and a method statement. And it's more than that. It's about how, as a leader, we cast a shadow and we need to be mindful of the shadow that we cast because the things that we do have so much more impact on the way that our people go to work and things that we say. So that was really my sort of moment that things changed for me and fell into place was the incident I felt responsible for. And then going through that evolution of safety, understanding safety from the technical perspective and from the behaviour-based safety perspective and now from the HOP. And sort of more and more we're moving into looking at, you know, leadership development and courageous leaders. Courageous leadership is a topic very close to my heart. Yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, in your writing and some of the stuff that you communicate from your organization about the importance of courageous leadership. Can you give us a bit more detail as to what that means for you and what you think it should mean for leaders of businesses?
Yeah, I think the role of a leader is very, very difficult. It's extremely challenging in every organization. But for me, courageous leaders are those who are able to hold up the mirror on their own behavior, their own attitudes, their own values, and be able to really critique that and find themselves almost wanting, you know, finding the gaps and being prepared to do something about it. And one of the hardest things to do, I think, as a leader is sometimes to reflect back on the things that we've done and say, well, you know what, that maybe didn't work as well as I had hoped it would. Or actually, you know what, today I've gone out and I've learned something that has fundamentally shifted a belief or a paradigm that I held firm to in the past. And it's okay for me to say, hey, I'm growing, I'm learning every day, regardless of my age, experience, background, whatever that may be. And it's okay to say, yeah, you know, what got us to where we are today or what got me to where I am today as a leader is not what's going to get me through the next 5, 10, whatever years as a leader in the future. So I've got to change, I've got to adapt, I've got to understand more and more. And I think courageous leadership is about being able to sort of look at that and say, okay, I'm going to change the things I do here. And it's not necessarily that what I did before was bad. I now know something new today that I didn't know yesterday. And for me, one of the issues that I was seeing in some of the organizations and from my own experience, what had happened was we went through a whole period, and I think industry in general has gone through a whole period of trying to we call it soft skills. We've tried to teach leaders some soft skills. And as much as I hate the term, this is all about, you know, how we behave, what our attitudes are, how we manage people and so on and so forth. And unfortunately, I think there are some elements of industry and certainly some of the organizations that we have contact with almost become like it's gone too far in the other direction. And so very often we will see leadership teams and leaders who really don't know how to manage poor performance or don't know how to
courageous
conversations, you know. And so that for me is what courageous leadership about. It's about striking a fine balance between being a leader who inspires and motivates and empowers his or her people, but also who is able to draw the line and say, this is my standard, this is my expectation, and consistently this is what will happen if my people fall short of it. And I think people need that kind of, that firm leadership to understand what the line is.
What I'm getting from what you're saying is that there needs to be a line kind of drawn somewhere where there is accountability, but also that I suppose the expectations on leaders aren't as heavy. You pointed out before in our discussions about the stress that this actually puts on to management as well, and that obviously then that proliferates the problem, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we put our leaders under such huge pressure. So, you know, the job is so much different today for a leader than it was maybe 20, 30 years ago, or even 10 years ago. You know, we talk more about, you know, people's health and well-being. Suddenly, you know, our leaders are responsible for that. They're responsible, obviously, you know, they're responsible. They have health and safety responsibilities, they have operational responsibilities. They have the day job to do, which kind of welds them to their desk with, you know, paperwork and bureaucracy and red tape and all of these things that leaders have to do. And then we kind of say, oh, by the way, we also want you to, you know, coaching leadership style. So in order to do that, we want you to go out on the shop floor or, you know, out to where your people work and spend time there and observe them and, you know, identify safety issues and these kind of things. And suddenly, but we don't free up any of the back end time. So the leader is put under huge pressure to go out into the field, make sure people are doing the right thing in the right way, and identify something that might be unsafe or inappropriate, for example. So that gets interpreted by the leader as, I need to have all of the answers. And so the way that we teach these leaders to go out in the field is that we sort of say, well, you've got to ask open questions. You've got to try and encourage the person you're speaking to give you the answers. And, you know, but the leader goes out and they end up so crippled with kind of confusion about, well, how should I phrase this question and what question can I ask? And let alone, what am I looking at? What does this job entail? What is it about? That leaders can put themselves onto it under that pressure and they just become paralyzed with doubt. And then what happens is you actually see this avoidance of leaving the desk. You know, I'm too busy because I don't see the value of going out there, because actually what happens when I go out there is it just feels uncomfortable and it feels messy, and I don't have all the answers. So again, it's, you know, what we spend a lot of time doing at Paradigm is working one-to-one with leaders and saying, look, you don't have to have all the answers. You have to make sure you've got the team who between them can find the answers. And then you have to let these people go and do what you're paying them to do. You know, let them do their job and stand back and, you know, almost do the job of clearing the path, you know, making those, clearing things out of the way so that your workers can go and be as effective as they can possibly be. And that doesn't mean that you have to have all of the answers. And it's okay for you to go out. In fact, we would encourage you to go out and say, hey, I don't know a thing about this job that you're doing today. Talk to me about it. What is it a part of? What's the bigger picture here? How do you do this job? What qualifications and training do you need to do this job? And have a, what, you know, we would call a questioning attitude and a real sense of, we would call it a healthy unease. So you go out there and even if you do know the answers yourself, ask the question anyway, because your workers are doing that role and doing that activity day in, day out. And, you know, when we talk about human and organizational performance with our clients, we talk about something called organizational drift. You know, and that's where, you know, there's a sort of, there's a differentiation between work as imagined and work as done. You can only find that, you can only identify it if you go out with a question and attitude and you allow your people to talk to you. So it's, you know, sometimes we work in organizations where they've trained their leaders to be coaches And they're out in the field trying to do coaching, and they've got measures, or you must do so many coaching sessions a month and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, if we're not getting quality out of it, then why bother? We're just wasting our time. So just go and talk to people, and never underestimate the impact that you have as a leader on the people. So if you stop and reflect for yourself and think, well, how great is it? The opportunities when I've had to just get half an hour with my manager or my CEO or my director, to, you know, whether we've been traveling in a car somewhere or we happen to be, you know, in a meeting together, and I've managed half an hour of that individual's time to understand the world from their mind map and understand what's important to them and what their values are. Never, ever underestimate the impact that your people have on the job when they get that from you, because they're looking for that as well. They're looking to have that one-to-one time with you and feel like they're important to your mission and to your business. And I think very often we don't teach our leaders about, you know, their own sort of impact. And that's why this, you know, the shadow you cast is so important, because you know, if you have a company policy, and we see some silly, you know, policies and rules sometimes, dare I say it, you know, maybe, you know, you've got to, you know, don't get, again, I'm just picking on an example here, but, you know, no mobile phones, no talking on the phone and driving, yeah. And yet we give them a company car and we put hands-free kit in it, so, you know. And then as a manager, we know that that individual is out driving to a meeting or driving to a site or going to see a client or whatever that may be. And yet we ring them. And rather than starting the conversation with, hey, is it safe to talk? Or, you know, we just launch in. And, you know, we've got, you know, we work with power distribution organizations who have got guys and girls going out in the field and they've got laptops in their vehicles, you know, which where the next job comes through on. And there it is, it's sat right in front of their face while they're driving a big truck or a huge van. Mm. And then when you have an accident, you see a corrective action like be more attentive, pay more attention, be, you know, have more situational awareness. Well, take the bloody laptop out of the cab of the truck.
Yeah.
No, don't put things in there that distract me. And this is what I'm saying about the things that we do as leaders have so much more impact. They drive so many different behaviours to the things we say. And that's really what we try at Paradigm when we're working with leadership teams, to try and make them understand the impact of the things that they're doing.
It seems like, I suppose, to a large extent, we're maybe providing too much information to managers in some contexts and overwhelming them with strategies and ways of doing things that often confuses them, rather than maybe just leveraging and communicating the importance of giving their time and genuine attention to employees and listening, which is something that comes up often in conversations that I have with people. Sometimes, you know, when you give a person too much to think about when they go to approach a conversation, then it can just become a case of, you know, analysis paralysis, and ultimately can lead to them avoiding putting themselves in that scenario at all, which is obviously the worst outcome. Is there anything that you would say in terms of, you know, a simple rule of thumb or a simple way that managers can approach these conversations, or a simple thought process that they can use?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a couple of things, really. For me, what we try to do with the organisations that we work with, and what I try to do in my own organisation, is make sure that leaders are leading. And that's the expectation, that you are a leader in this business. That doesn't necessarily mean you have manager in your title, by the way. But if you are leading, then that's your job. And, you know, there are managers in some of our businesses that, you know, and people who are listening to this will know the characters I'm talking about, who will never, ever have a coaching style for as long as they live. And it doesn't make them a bad manager or a bad leader. It just means they're a different leader. So for me, I think at the organizational level, it's about treating your leadership team in the same way as you would treat a football team. Making sure you've got the right players in the right positions on the field, so that they can be as effective as they possibly can. And you'll have leaders who have a natural propensity to empower and influence and do all that great stuff with your staff. And you will also have managers in your business who are there about, this is the standard, this is the expectation, and this is where we're gonna play. This is our playing field. And I think you need a blend of both. I don't think you can confuse the two skill sets. You need both of them in your organization. Some leaders have got both. Fantastic. It's a really difficult balance. So that's the first thing I'd say. You know, let your leaders lead and let your managers manage. And also, I guess I would add to that, there's a difference between a coaching style of leadership and being a coach. So a coach is somebody who works with an individual or a group of individuals to get the best out of them, but it's drawing the solutions and the answers out of those people. That's what a coach does. And sometimes people don't need to be coached. They need to be led, or they need to be managed. So don't be afraid of that. Don't be afraid to manage people and lead people. If you want coaches, great. Train some of your really natural, you know, people in your organization who are naturally coaches or have a natural coaching style. Teach them, let them coach, but let your leaders lead and your managers manage. That's what I would say. Look at the role. Take some time, look at the role and say, what are the extraneous things here that we're putting on our leaders? And, you know, that we could either take away. Can we delegate? Can we help our leaders, show them how to delegate some of these tasks down to their people, which ultimately will help us with our succession planning? But, you know, just really understand, and I'm not talking about going to the length, you know, detail of like time and motion studies, but really understand what your leader's time is spent doing. And are you getting the maximum return on that investment out of them? So that's kind of what I would suggest in terms of the people piece. The other side of it that, again, is really common is to go into an organisation and where leaders are really struggling as well. You know, I have to go out in the field 4 times a month and have to record an observation or have to do a safety tour and then have to come back and have to fill in this database or write this card up and post it in a postbox and things like that. Basically, if that data, you know, if the analysis is just all about numbers in a database or numbers of cards completed, or if you're finding out from all of that, the data that you're collecting, that it's just data, there's no information in there, then be brave enough, be courageous enough as a leadership team to say, do you know what, I'm going to stop doing this. Yeah. It's not adding value. You know, don't keep feeding a machine just for the sake of printing out a spreadsheet once a month that says, hey, look, Joe Bloggs did 20 observations this month, but, you know, Jenny over here only did 4, so let's give Jenny a kick in. You know, those 4 may have been damn good opportunities for learning for that organization. So don't get too hung up with data in a database or in a spreadsheet. Don't worry about the data. Extract the information. Because all of that is what I would call business intelligence. What is that telling you about your business? You know, and for me, courageous leadership at the team level is about saying what adds value and what doesn't add value. You know, and we could get into a whole raft of conversation and discussion about KPIs or OKRs and things like that. And, you know, are we measuring the right things? You know, are we really measuring the things that matter?
Yeah, as you say, you know, the devil's in the detail. People often just use a number, a metric, you know, and talk about it and obviously use it as an indicator as to whether something is positive or negative without actually understanding exactly what information they're looking at and obviously yeah, all the absolutely. Valuable stuff that runs underneath that. It's a real bugbear of my own, I have to say. And one of the things you mentioned to me, but it's really important. And one of the things you mentioned in discussions we had was about understanding your company culture, and being able to do that is intrinsically linked to knowing what happens when no one is looking. And I think this is something that our audience could certainly relate to, you know, as health and safety professionals primarily. What What do you mean more specifically about that? And is there a way that we can actually tangibly, you know, use that as a measuring stick to see, you know, what is actually going on?
Yeah, so actually this is where sort of the whole thing really pulled together for me. So, you know, if you have good business intelligence, you know, i.e. information about what is going on in your business, and I'm not by any stretch just talking about health and safety management here, I'm talking about, you know, everything. So if you have a good measure of what, you know, if you have good information, sorry, about your organization and how it's performing, then what you should be able to do is be able to interrogate that information to say, what is really going on in our organization? So one of the examples here is, and I'll sort of quote Todd Conklin on this, is, you know, how you respond to events in your organization. And I'm talking about the unexpected and the unwanted, maybe accidents, maybe project overruns, maybe, you know, financial misforecasting, whatever it may be. How you respond to those negative things in your organization determines what your culture is. So if when there's an accident, because that's kind of the easy one to talk about, you go on a hunt for who was the last person who touched it, then your culture will be one of reactivity. And eventually, if you respond in a really bad way, where there's a lot of discipline associated with things that go wrong, then your people will stop telling you what's going wrong. And that's extremely counterintuitive to what we actually want as leaders. We want to know what's going wrong. We want to know before it goes wrong so that we can prevent it. So I think really just looking at the business intelligence that you're gathering around your organization in all its various forms and connecting the lot so that you can tell a story. And, you know, one of the areas where we sort of specialize in here is we help a lot of clients with incident investigation. That's a particular passion of mine, to help organizations look at incidents in a different way, to look at them as, rather than, you know, the things that are derailing us, and they often do, actually look at them as an opportunity to learn and an opportunity to improve and make sure that we've got resilience in our systems and we've got capacity to fail safe. So, you know, using the intelligence in our organization in a different way to the way we use it today. And if you do use that in a smart way, then absolutely you can very clearly start to understand, sorry, your, what we would call an error footprint. And, you know, when things go wrong in our organization, what are not just the physical factors, but what are the, you know, what are the conditions? What are the environmental conditions? What are the task conditions? So that we can start to paint a picture of, again, what we call the perfect storm. When you look at a job and you're planning a job, you think, okay, well, this is an operation that's going to have to happen outside of normal operational hours, for example. So we're going to bring a team of guys in on an evening shift or on a night shift to put, you know, do a particular task or activity. And we know that these guys, you know, we may not have given them a sufficient rest period. Have we done a risk assessment to make sure they're okay to come in and do it? We know that, you know, it's going to be inclement weather. We know it's going to be dark. We know all of these things. The guys are tired. They're going to be under pressure because the job's got to be done on that shift. So we already know that we've got a perfect storm for something to go wrong. That's when I want you to put your leaders in the field. That's when I want leaders out there. And then leaders are set up for success to go and observe that activity or that job, because they know exactly what the error precursors are that they're looking for. They know what the environmental conditions are that they're looking for. And at that point, they can really set that job up for success by saying, guys, look, we know at this time, on this specific path, these are the things that could go wrong. So let's take a bit more time up front here. Let's talk about, you know, what's the worst that can happen. Let's do a really thorough pre-job brief. Let's talk about our error prevention tools and techniques. Let's go through the risk assessment. Rather than, that's a completely different approach to leading in the field and on the job than just going out, you know, sort of ad hoc, hoping to find something going on. And, you know, then having to sort of do sort of what I call spot checking from 50 yards away I'll stand behind a pole rather than go and interrupt workers and see if I can spot anything going wrong. You know, get out there, get stuck in, because you should have good enough quality business intelligence in your systems to be able to forecast where your next accident is coming from or your next unwanted outcome, whatever that may be. You know, if you've got a project that's running today that it's overrunning or it's under budget or it's over budget or whatever, you know, don't keep blindly going down that alley. Stop. Do what we would call an investigation, as Todd Conklin would probably call a pre-accident investigation or an appreciative inquiry. Go out and understand why it's going wrong now, because at this point it's just a small course correction. Whereas if you allow those situations to continue, hey, then it's a cultural program and a huge organizational change program. And so sometimes we have so much business intelligence and information around us that we just don't have the time to look at it because we're busy putting out fires. And so, you know, for me, it's about trying to, again, this vicious circle about freeing up the time so that leaders can lead, use the data that they've got, the information that they've got in their databases and in their spreadsheets to really be a bit more intelligent about their organization. Hope that makes sense, does it?
No, it does, you know. And I think you touched on a couple of, you really important aspects there from the point of view of, you know, getting there and taking action before something manifests into something severe, but also, you know, the challenge around, and often we use it as an excuse, you know, around time, around being under pressure to be able to actually do something tangible. But I think probably, you know, a big challenge for people is, you know, picking your battles and actually recognizing the red flags when they appear, you know, and prioritizing when to take action. And, you know, if you can have and build some certainty around that, which I suppose relates back to the business intelligence that you're talking about. You know, if you can actually use that information to help you make informed decisions as to when you need to step in, when extra resource needs to be, you know, deployed, or when something needs to be stopped, then certainly that should help you. Would that be fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, again, just sort of doubling back on that, is again, courageous leadership is about saying, look, we've got all of this intelligence, we've got, you know, as in data and information, we've got all of this stuff, and some of it is really important, and you know what, the rest of it is dross. And so we need to have the courage to say, do you know what, we're not going to investigate everything that goes wrong in this organization, but we are going to focus on high potentials. We are going to focus on the things that have very seriously gone wrong, you know, where somebody's been seriously injured. But actually, do we need to waste so, and I really mean waste so much time investigating near hits that, you know, the worst possible outcome was achieved. And, you know, hey, maybe that's a tolerable risk for our organization. So for me, it's about changing the conversation at the board level and at the senior director level to say, does this matter? You know, we've just spent, you know, and I've been in these meetings myself as an employee, as a manager, you know, and as an employer, in fact, where you start to talk about, well, you know, was it a lost time injury? Well, you know, was it a medical treatment or was it a first aid?
Yeah.
You know, we waste so much of our lives having these, quite frankly, valueless conversations. And it's just like, for me, everyone around the table is normally thinking, why the hell are we having this discussion? This is just crazy. Don't have the discussion. Somebody look up and say, do you know what? We're wasting our time here. Let's just move on. You know, it's happened. We do injure people. We do have accidents. We do have incidents. And if we sit here looking back and procrastinating over whether it's a lost time, an LTA or an R3 or whatever it is, you know what? The next accident is already brewing. And we could be out in the field looking at that, or we could be using our data to look at where's the next one coming from and preventing it. But we just get in these vicious circles. And I guess, again, what you come back to is this piece about, well, what gets measured gets done. And, you know, and I know there's some new thinking now which says, you know, what gets measured gets manipulated. And we all see that. We all know that's going on out there. Let's you know, be honest, this is what I'm talking about, holding up the mirror and saying, do we really believe that we've had absolutely zero accidents and incidents? Do we really believe we've gone 3 years with no injuries? All this kind of stuff, you know, really?
Yeah. I have to say, I go into businesses that communicate such things and just think, what a load of rubbish, you know, really, a lot of the time. And, you know, it must be driving the wrong behaviors, as you're saying, in terms of underreporting. And, you know, who's fooling who there? You know, really, it's nonsense to a large extent.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I don't think as leaders we set out to do these things deliberately.
No.
I don't think as leaders where they're going, well, you know, if we you know, push this point strong enough, the guy who cuts his finger tomorrow, he just won't bother reporting it, and that'll be a good day for us. But that's absolutely not anyone's intent. We don't intend to do that. But we inadvertently drive that because of the way we respond when those things do go wrong. You know, if somebody comes in and says, hey, Governor, look, you know, I've had an accident, or I've crashed a vehicle or something like that. If your first response is, Jesus, you know, you idiot, you know, how did this happen? How did you manage to do that? You know, all those kind of things. Then eventually there's a disincentive to come and tell you those things. And for me, the other question that I ask, you know, when I go into organisations, and if you are an organisation that has had 3 years injury-free, then you know that to be absolutely genuinely true, then congratulations. That is astonishing. And you really should be celebrating and shouting that from the rooftops. If, like me, when you go into those organisations, you go, okay, so we've had a clean sheet for 3 years, does that mean we haven't actually learned anything new in 3 years? Because if that's what that means, that's not good. We shouldn't be celebrating that. If we are really not seeing opportunities to learn in that kind of a time frame, then either we've got the wrong idea about accidents and incidents and things that go wrong, or we are really not learning and we're not evolving as an organisation and we're not getting better. And we only have to look across, you know, the path to see our competitors who are getting better. We cannot afford not to learn lessons in our organisations. And, you know, again, some indications that we look for, you know, so are we working with an organisation that never, ever has any minor injuries or near hits, but suddenly has a fatality, which seemingly comes out of the blue? Or somebody, you know, suddenly has a massive, you know, life-changing injury, or a project suddenly loses $3 million, or, you know, what the hell? We should have seen that coming. And if we didn't, then shame on us. Why are we not learning? And so for me, you know, around HOP is about getting out there and saying, you know, where's our organizational drift? And as leaders, being courageous enough to say, there are things going on out there today, which we may have reinforced in the past. We do not want to reinforce going forward. And we are relying on the experts in our business, i.e. the people who do the job, to help us understand and prevent these things from going wrong. So if we've got organisational drift, let's talk about it. Why have we got it? Is the organisational drift benefiting us or hindering us? Is there a quicker, easier, leaner, smarter, safer way to do this job that our workers have found, but we haven't yet acknowledged in our processes and our procedures and our risk assessment? You know, what is really going on in our organisation? And if we go out, or we only go out when things have gone wrong, you know, so the only time I get to spend any time with the VP or the director is when I've had an accident, and that's my accountability meeting. You know, hey, I get to meet the big boss today, but it wasn't on great terms. You know, then we should be looking for the opportunities as courageous leaders to bring the guys and girls in when they're doing, and nothing's gone wrong, to say, hey, how did we manage to get through this week and hit our productivity targets, hit every one of our measures? What went right? How the hell did we do that? those are great conversations. Everyone wants to have those conversations. And those are the times when courageous leaders are the most active for me. They're understanding, how the hell did we manage to get that so right?
Yeah, and on that as well, as you're saying, you know, during those conversations when there's positivity in the room, there's something, you know, to be proud of. They're much more likely to be open about, you know, things within that process that maybe didn't go quite as well as they could have. And then there's learning opportunities within that. And something you mentioned there, Teresa, which I think you were going to go on to there, is about mirroring behaviors. And just obviously to wrap us up on this, something you've already mentioned about the impact of what you do compared to the impact of what you say. Can you leave us with something for the audience to take away on that?
Yeah, I can. Yes. Yeah. So I'll start with an example. So I was recently delivering a training course for a client in the UK. And the managing director was coming along to open the training course, which is, we always encourage, fantastic. The gentleman rang me and said, Teresa, where are you? I said, we're at this location. And he said, oh, okay, I've come to the wrong location. So I'm going to turn around now and I'm on my way back to you. And I'll be there as quickly as I can. Please start the course. Please give my apologies, but I will be there as soon as I can. So I said, yeah, absolutely. So the gentleman then turned up much quicker than anyone would have anticipated he would have turned up. And so he came in and he introduced, you know, the course a little bit late and said, I'm sorry, I wasn't here earlier. This is what happened. Human error. I went to the wrong place. And one of the people in the room challenged him and said, can I just ask how you managed to get back here so quickly? And he said, we're on a human performance course, so I'm going to tell you, I sped. I didn't comply with the speed limit and I rushed to get back here. And yeah, really good question. I'm glad you've asked it of me. And here I am doing what Teresa keeps telling me to do. I'm holding up the mirror. And yeah, cards on the table, I didn't comply with the speed limit coming back here. So that's a brilliant example. And those things happen every day, don't they? Every single day that is going on in our organisation. So my question as a parting shot for this podcast is, if the people in your organisation or the people in your team started to mirror your behaviours today, would you be having a good day at the office?
That's something for our audience to think about, and I guess to look around them as well with their peers and their fellow leaders. Maybe something to ask, you know, amongst certain groups and get people to reflect upon, because as you rightly mentioned, it's a very strong question and it's a great example to give. Fair play to the person for asking the business leader that question. That was pretty gutsy, but even more kudos to him for being honest about it. I guess he couldn't do otherwise unless he was going to tell him that he took a plane across to wherever he was going. But it is a perfect example of how, you know, time pressure and different aspects result in us behaving differently and force us into these positions. So
yeah, absolutely. And we are very privileged that we work with organisations who are so embracing of this, you know, this new perspective sometimes that we bring and this new challenge that we bring. And it changes organisations and it changes people. And so, for example, that question from that member of the workforce, that's not an unusual question in organisations we work with, and that's not an unusual response from a very high-skilled, caring, competent leader who I particularly have a lot of respect for this gentleman, because he's gone through an evolution while he's been working with us, and you know, he has many, many courageous conversations, and he is constantly holding the mirror up on his own behaviours, and I think he and his leadership team, they've come on such a massive journey in the last 18 months, and you know, just by doing what comes naturally to them as leaders. And that, you know, I'm not saying that you need to bring in a specialist consultant to help you do this. I just think you need to have the courage as a leadership team to say, you know, are we practicing what we preach, and that's what's important. And then, yeah, enabling those, really encouraging those challenges and those conversations, because, hey, don't we all benefit from somebody stopping us in our tracks sometimes and making us think about something new.
Well, thank you very much for wrapping that up with a great question, Teresa, and thank you again for taking the time out of your busy schedule to connect with us here all the way from the USA, and we wish you a safe flight back to the UK for however long you get to stay here.
Yes, thank you.
I look forward to sharing this with everyone. Can you just very quickly let us know where we can actually find you and your organization in case anyone wants to reach out to discuss any of what we have further?
Yeah, absolutely. So our website is www.paradigmhp.com. And I'm going to spell paradigm because some people spell it as in America we get called a pair of dimes. So it's paradigmhp.com. So that's our web address. You can go on there and contact us via that. If you would like to speak to me personally, you can email me at teresa@paradigmhp.com. And we run free training courses normally once a month somewhere in the world. We've got an introduction to hop course running, but also we do free consultations. And our target, our company mission is to educate 30,000 organizations by 2030 about the transformational effect of human and organizational performance. So, conversations, we love to have them because it helps us one step closer towards our target. And hopefully, as you can tell, myself and my team, this is our passion. It's not just our job. This is our passion. And we'd be delighted to help you set you up for success and introduce you to some of these things that we do.
Well, that's an excellent summary and, really, really cool thing to be able to do. A really great target and vision to have for your business as well. I'll put a link out, obviously, to your site, and people can go on and see where you're doing these free sessions, which I think could be really valuable for some of the folks listening as well.
Absolutely.
Thanks again, Teresa, and hopefully we'll speak to you soon.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Richard. Good to talk to you and speak to you soon.
Well, that was Teresa Swinton all the way from Kansas in the USA, taking the time out to speak to us. So thank you very much, Teresa, for doing that. I certainly appreciate it. It isn't easy to set time aside to do these things whenever you're traveling with lots going on there. But as I'm sure you'll agree, that's a real interesting insight from Teresa, just in terms of her journey with the horrific incident that happened and the loss of so many lives leading her to where she is today. But just to reflect on some of the things that she said there throughout that 45 plus minutes of podcast, some things that I sort of jotted down were, well, initially what had instigated me to speak to Teresa in the first place was just that notion of being aware of the shadow that we cast as leaders of organizations or businesses or people in general. Sometimes it's easy to forget the influence and the impression that you can leave on people and the impact that that has on their behaviors. And that certainly is one of the major lessons that Teresa communicates as a result of the journey that she's went through. I think we can all take something away from that. Secondly, the importance of reflection, which we've mentioned a few times on the Safety Podcast, and I think it's something to keep reiterating, and that is just looking back whenever certain things are happening and asking yourself, are you giving yourself enough time to ask what worked and what didn't, and learning from that as you move forward and taking those lessons to improve going into the future. Sometimes things are just a bit too hectic and we don't get a chance to do that reflection. And, maybe you can use this podcast and that information from Teresa as, as motivation to be the person amongst your peers to press the pause button and really reflect on things that have happened recently and see if you're using them in a positive way to move forward with the business. Another thing that Teresa mentioned there, which I think is really important, certainly from my own personal experiences throughout my career, it's something I always try to be good at. I suppose it's something I think personally that it's in my nature anyway, maybe too much, some would say, but the importance of being brave enough to point out whenever something isn't adding value, and to identify that, you know, something is just being done for the sake of it, and being brave enough, having the courage to say, look, let's not do that. Let's try and remove that from our processes. It's a time wasting exercise. We're not getting any additional value when it comes to whatever we're trying to achieve, and taking something away just to give you that extra time to do things that are more valuable. Towards the end, then we started to discuss about reporting, and again, I suppose it links into that value question. A lot of organizations, you know, we run around talking about how long we've went without having an incident, and we sort of hold it up as a badge of honor, but there needs to be a very upfront question asked around, you know, what does that mean? And is it a case of what gets measured gets manipulated rather than what gets measured gets done? I think that's a very real question, and something that we need to be very honest about whenever we're looking at metrics. Also, going on from that, we do have a tendency to look at what went wrong. Certainly within the HSE profession, we're very inclined to wait until something goes wrong and then react to it, to disseminate it and to dissect it, and to look in to see what has actually went wrong before we have a learning outcome. But Teresa was just mentioning, and we have mentioned it before again as well, about just identifying when things are going right and asking the question, you know, why did it go right? How can we replicate that? How can we repeat that? You know, what is there that's so positive that we're doing that is contributing to these positive outcomes, and really using that as leverage to move forward in the right direction. And finally then, to wrap this up, something that Teresa left us with was, of course, if we hold the mirror up to ourselves and we ask if those around us or those under our influence were behaving in the way that we do, would we be happy with the outcome of that? And again, it's just that question of, is what you say the same as what you do? When the pressure is on, when there's external influences, are you still holding your values firm and conducting yourself in the way that you're expecting others to? Okay, that wraps us up for this one. I think there's plenty to take away and think about from that as a business leader, as an HSE professional or otherwise. Hopefully you've enjoyed this piece of content. And if you do have any questions for either myself or Teresa, please don't be afraid to reach out. Take care and see you soon. Thank you once again for joining us for this episode. We really hope you got value from the content. If you'd like to provide us with some feedback, which we would obviously love, please take a minute to rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you're using. Also, if you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe to make sure you catch our future episodes. And of course, share it with anyone who you think may find it useful. For more free resources and to find out more about what we do, you're always welcome to visit us at safety.com. Until next time, take care and good luck.